Morning. Continuing to go through some of Rav Soloveitchik, the Rav Zichron Roch's insights into the Maggid section of the Haggadah. So after the Arba Bonim, we make a statement, Michila Ovde Avodah Zarah Hayavoseinu. Originally, our ancestors, it goes back to Terach Avi Avram, were idolaters. And we know that the Gemara has a machlokas in Pesachim Daf Kuf Tes Anam and Aleph. According to one view, the view of Rav, this recitation actually fulfills the requirement of Maskel Begnusa Messiah and B'Shevach. We're supposed to tell the story. One of the unique features of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is that we're supposed to start with the negative and go to the positive. That's not required. That's one of the differences that Reb Chaim and others have highlighted as to why Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is different. The mitzvah on Pesach night is different than there's a mitzvah of Zechiris Yetzias Mitzrayim all year long, every evening, throughout the year. That's what we discussed in the Mishnah in Brachas that we quote in the Haggadah, the Mishnah of Ben Zoma and the Rosh Hashanah. So that's all year long. So what's the difference between Pesach night and any other night? Why is this night different than all other nights? So the Reb Chaim had three important differences. And then there are other differences, but one of them is that on Pesach have to tell the whole story. Maskel Begnus V'Sayim B'Shevach. A regular Zechiyas Yetzias Mitzrayim. On a nightly basis, you just have to make mention that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, but you don't have to go through the whole story. On Pesach night, Maskel Begnus. The question is, what exactly is the Gnus? What's the degrading or negative point? So that's according to Rav, it's Mitchila Odevarozari over saying, going way back, we come from a family of idolaters, from Terach Avi Avram and so on. Shmuel, though, says that no, the degrading part is Avodim Hayinu. We're talking about slavery in Egypt. And we know that the Machlokes is, what are we focusing on? Are we focus on a physical enslavement or on the, shall we say, spiritual enslavement? This physical negativity is Avodim Hayinu. We're physically slaves. The spiritual enslavement, so to speak, is Mitchila Hayu Ode Avodah Zarah. We've accepted both opinions. We towards the beginning of the Seder, we say Avodah Hayinu, and the Mitchila Ode Avodah Zarah, we say at this point also. So we've accepted both. We understand that Yetzias Mitzrayim is not only a physical redemption, but a spiritual redemption as well. And the Rav pointed out is that if you look in the bracha that concludes the Maggid section of the Haggadah, the bracha, but right before we drink the second cup of wine, before the Bar Per Goffin, and we say Baruchat Hashem Gual Yisrael, right before we celebrate, it says Al Gulosenu Al Pedus Nafshenu. Two phrases, Al Gulosenu Al Pedus Nafshenu. So that's what the Rav said, and others say this too, that Al Gulosenu refers to the physical redemption. Al Pedus Nafshenu, the salvation of our souls, that refers to the spiritual side. Our practice, as you know, is we take the parsha that appears in the Sedra Kisavo. Parsha Kisavo has at the beginning the mitzvah of Bikurim, that a person is supposed to bring his first fruits to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, to bring all the fruits to Eretz Yisrael. And there's a whole ceremony that took place. The Torah doesn't go into the whole ceremony. The Mishnah is described. There was a whole parade. People marched in. And decorated, the animals were decorated. I think I spoke about it once early in the year. We talked about Hidden Mitzvah. But in any event, there was a whole ceremony. People marched into Yerushalayim and they came to the Beis HaMikdash and they had a recite. That the Torah says they had a recite that's called Mikra Bikurim, a text with a brief overview of Jewish history. So, as you know, what we do in the Seder is we take those psukim from Parshas Kisavo and we extrapolate phrase by phrase what that means. That's a very brief, those just in four psukim, tells the whole story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, really starting with Arami Oved Avi, with Lavan, and then the Vayed Mitzrayim, etc., and eventually, we came out. So each, what we do, and I remember years and years ago, Baruch Hashem, the Haggadahs have improved, but years and years ago, certainly when I was a kid, even as a young adult, he sometimes had difficulty figuring out all these random psukim, v'nemar, and this means this is that. So I remember feeling that what they should do in the Haggadah is they should bold or use a different font or a different color for the four psukim, and then use that color just for the phrases that are being darshan. That fits in very well. I think now a lot of the Haggadahs do that. We've come a long way in terms of printing. The old Haggadahs, when a paragraph ended in a funny place, it was hard to figure out which psukim were associated with what. But now, they'll quote the pasuk, Arami or whatever, Vayered Mitzrayim, etc. And then they'll take each phrase, Vayered Mitzrayim, that'll be in the same font, or the same color as the pasuk. And then the drasha on that phrase will be in a different color, in a different font. So you can see exactly what's modifying what. And that's, I think, a good way to do it. Of course, that's the ikar part of the Haggadah. Unfortunately, what happens many times is, we discuss a lot of things about Holach Ma'anya and about Manashtana and Avodah Mayinu, and that's where the children have so many pamphlets and the articles and things that they want to discuss. Then you come to the Psukim, which is the Iker part of Sipur Sanah, that one davens up very fast. Zip through that, get to Dayenu. But that's not really the best way. The best way is to explain those Psukim as Chazal did. Anyway, one of the phrases there is the phrase, V'acharei chen yeitzu b'rchush gadol. Right, that the Avtocha was already from the time of the Bris Ben Absarim. This is really before those Psukim. This is really before those Psukim, because we have a little synopsis from the end of Sefer Yeshua. Anyway, we quote the Pasuk Vacharei, Chein Yetzu Berchush Gadol, was not from those Psukim, and it's not even one of the drush on those Psukim, but it says that the Yisrael were promised, Avram was promised, the Dor Teda Kigeri Zaracha, the Bris Ben Absarim, right, the Bris Ben Absarim, and in the Bris Ben Absarim, Avram was promised that eventually his children will be taken. What's that? What is that? They'll leave with great wealth. Why is that an important part of the story? So people remember the Gemara in Brachas says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to make sure to keep that promise. He had to make sure to tell the Moshe, to tell Bnei Yisrael, when you go out, take stuff with you, right? Get from your neighbors, chesed, chesed, smallest, and so on, which they did, right? By Natsalos Mitzrayim, they did that because he wanted to keep his promised Avraham Avinu. Okay, you can ask a lot of kasha gemara. What do you mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have kept his promise, you know, otherwise, whatever. But the question, why was that part of the promised Avraham Avinu to begin with? And why was that important? So the Rav suggested, again, we mentioned this earlier by Holach Manya, that one of the characteristics of a Ben Choron is owning property. An Eved doesn't own anything. That's the Gemara Pesachim on Peches Mabei. So, and other places it's referred to. So, when they were slaves in Mitzrayim, the Jewish people had no material possessions. Nothing belonged to them. So, when they became free, one of the definitions of Ben Choron is ownership of property. And therefore, and the Rav pointed out the fact that the property would be given to them by the Mitzrayim, by the Egyptians, you know, Mishrala Isha Mishchenta, and so on, would be given by the Egyptians, means that they would recognize the Jewish people are free. So, that's part of the part of the Yeshua, part of the definition of Ben Choron is to be free. The Rav pointed out, as others do in Vehisha Amda, right? The point of Vehisha Amda is to demonstrate that the Yetzias Mitzrayim was not a one-time historical event, but unfortunately, b'chol dor v'dor omdu l'el chaloseinu. So we have to remember that Yetzias Mitzrayim is in the present also. We remind ourselves today that we need a Gula, we need a Yeshua. That's the idea of Vehisha Amda. I just said this is not from the Rav, but once I'm here, I'll just throw in something I said once myself. We see the phrase in V'hisha Amdo is B'chol Dor V'dor, Om Dor V'chal Oseinu, right? Every generation. That same phrase, B'chol Dor V'dor, appears later in Haggadah from the Mishnah Pesachim. B'chol Dor V'dor, Chayav Adam Liros Asatzmo, Kilu Yatsu Mitzrayim. The same B'chol Dor V'dor. So the antidote to B'chol Dor V'dor, Om Dor V'chal Oseinu, maybe is the B'chol Dor V'dor that we view that we came out of Mitzrayim. That's the idea that the Rav is saying. He didn't make that comparison with the words, but that's what he's saying here. One of the phrases we darshan is the pasuk Vayered Mitzrayim Onos Al Pi Adibur. Onos Al Pi Adibur. We were kind of forced, right? We went down to Mitzrayim forced. So one of the questions is, what do you mean? Yaakov went down willingly to go see Yosef, right? The word came back, the Yosef was O Yosef Chai. So he didn't go down, he was forced to go down. He went down willingly to go and see Yosef when he heard that Yosef is still alive. So what do you mean, Onos Vayered Mitzrayim, Onos Al Pi Adibur? Who forced him to go down? So the Rav suggested, evidently, Yaakov's plan originally was to go down to see Yosef and to have a nice reunion to go back home. He's going to go back up. Who said he had to stay down in Mitzrayim? He's going to go to see Yosef and reunite and all the emotion that would carry with him. But then he's going to go back to Eretz Canaan to live there, back in Eretz Yisrael. The idea of staying in Mitzrayim, that's the Onos Al Pi Adibur. And the Rav suggested that one of the purposes of the Mitzrayim episode was to, or the reason it had to be in Mitzrayim, was to create a national characteristic, certain sensitivities or certain characteristics. The Gemara says, in the Yevamos, the Gemara says, I think it's on Ayin Tes Chaf, the Gemara says that Jewish people are Rachmanim and Baishanim and Gomel Chasadim. That's a natural trait. That's a big debate among psychologists. Do you have, when a person is born, do you have what's called the tabula rasa? Just everyone's born the exact same, and everything is based on what goes on outside, nurture and so on, or can certain physical characteristics be already ingrained in a person? The Gemara, at least, emotional characteristics and psychological characteristics. So the Gemara here seems to suggest that certain psychological or natural tendencies, can be inborn. But the Rav suggested that that was formed by the Mitzrayim experience. Because right after it says, Vayir Mitzrayim, it says, Vayisham Legoy, or Vayisham Legoy Godol. Okay? The stat, it's one flows to the other. Vayir Mitzrayim, Anos Vapir Dibur. Why? You ended up there, Vayisham Legoy Godol. And then it says, Varav, and it quotes a pasuk, Ravava Ketzema Chatzot, a pasuk from Navi, Yecheskel, Perek Tazayim. The word Rav is sometimes translated as numerous. But the Rav said that that's the Rav Soloveitchik said that's not the right translation here, because you see from the proof text, from the pasuk that backs it up, it says Ravava Ketzema Chatzot is not talking about the number, it's not talking about quantity. It's talking about in a sense of, and in fact, the truth is we already had earlier that they increased in number. So the Rav said that here the idea is that the people increased in terms of their maturity, in terms of their stature and Barav and dignity. Okay, they became ready to be redeemed and ready to receive the Torah. The two things, right? One, they did increase number-wise, okay? But that's the previous phrase, Otzum. That's the physical number that they can increase. But Barav, as you see from the proof text that cited the pasuk and the Navi, you look there in Yechezkel, it's talking about a physically maturing person, a physically maturing woman. This is because a Kalisha compared to that. So the Barav does not mean numerous, even though I think that's how many people translate it. But I've actually thought that it doesn't really mean numerous. I'm not sure what the right word would be, but mature or dignified, and that's it. Lastly, for today, who mentioned it says Vayareo son Hamitrim, Vayareo son Hamitrim, and very often that's also translated that the Egyptians treated us badly. But the Rav said, really, if that were correct grammatically, it should say Vayareo lonu, not Vayareo son, Vayareo lonu Hamitrim, not Vayareo sonu. And he felt the more correct translation here is Vayareo sonu, is that they thought of us as evil. They attributed evil to us. Vayareo sonu, they looked at us as evil. Okay? In what sense? Because they assigned bad characteristics to us. They assigned bad attributes to us. They depicted us as bad people. That's Vayareo sonu. And so Vayareo lonu, they treated us badly. They did that too. But this pasuk is saying Vayareo sonu, they treat us as bad people. And the Rav pointed out, that's exactly what Paro said at the beginning. What did he say? He said, Havan ischak malo, right? Pen yirbe, and b'bir mechoma, b'no safka mo asaneinu. He accused the Jews of disloyalty, right? They thought, what basis was that? The Jews were nefarious or scheming people. The Jewish people had a good name in Mitzrayim. They're successful. All of a sudden, Paro says, Havan ischak malo, pen yirbe, why? The Jews will go on to the other side. Why would they do that? But that's, the Rav pointed out, that's a methodology of anti-Semitism, to always accuse the Jews of not being loyal to the local country. Jews fought and died in every army, every country where they were. They fought on behalf of that country for centuries. The Jews lived in Russia, they fought in the Russian army. They fought in, the German army. My grandfather, Baruch Hashem, ended up saving him, but he had fought in World War I in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. That's where he lived. He was drafted into the army. Because he fought there, he was able to, when he was arrested after Kristallnacht, was able to get out because he had certain papers and credentials having been in the Austro-Hungarian army. But Jews fought and were loyal citizens wherever they left, wherever they lived, pretty much. But that was the way, there's no logical basis for that. The Jews didn't do anything wrong, and there's no indication that the Jews were anything but model citizens in the country where they lived. But Paro was clever. As the Rav said, that's what an anti-Semite does. He plays on the kind of natural disdain or natural fear that people have of the outsider. Okay, the Rav pointed out that in Germany, we have evidence that Jews lived in Germany since the time of Charlemagne, before the year 1000. So the Jews, by the time of the Holocaust, had lived in Germany for close to 1,000 years. And yet, they're different. They're not part of us. They're outsiders. They just came in. What if they just came in? They were living here for 1,000 years or something like that, whatever the number of years was. But this is classic anti-Semitism. The Jews can live comfortably and productively for many years, and with loyalty and productivity in the land where they, and even work on behalf of the country they live in. But they're always in danger of an enemy who may come and say, it happened so many times, oh, they're dangerous, they're undermining, they're scheming, they're not really part of us, they're not us. Right? They're not part of, they're not Germany, they're not who we are. And that's what Paro did, and that's Vayarei Osano HaMitzvim. Wish everybody a good morning, and the Mitzvah Shem will have Shia today at 11:30. Okay.